Cool. So welcome, everyone. My name is Vishesh Obroy. I work at Microsoft New Zealand as a technical evangelist based out in Auckland, focusing on a lot of emerging tech, especially around, as you must have seen in the keynote, you know, around bots and trying to figure out, you know, how can our customers benefit from that. And also thinking about how can we really understand IoT and bring that forward as well and actually build solutions that we have locally referenceable in New Zealand, as well as looking at some of the newer architectures, such as you've got, you know, app services, then you've got microservices as well. And now today we are sort of talking about nano services. So let's talk about, I guess, serverless to begin with and understand what we've got overall throughout the session. So throughout the session, what you'll sort of hear today would be around, you know, what really is serverless compute? How can we make the most of it? Understand basic things, some concepts, some best practices that, you know, other people are, have been using outside. And then understand, you know, where does Azure Functions sit into that or fit into that place? And then we'll probably look into some demos throughout the presentation. I'll do some quick fire intros into different ways of configuring functions. And how can we sort of bring it forward? Just to get a quick show of hands, how many of you are already using Azure Functions as part of your workloads? Okay, and how many of you have heard of Azure Functions before? All right, quite a few, that's good. So hopefully by after today's session, you'll have a basic understanding of how to trigger a function, what are the scenarios, and how can you implement it. So that is what we'll cover today. And how many of you are using web jobs as part of your workloads today? Very few. So based on the interest of time, we might go over some comparisons as well around what's different and what's new and how can we, which one to choose in the near future. So as you must have seen in my description, you know, the biggest thing over there is that data is everywhere and processing power is everywhere as well. People are trying to figure out newer ways of doing compute. You've got, you know, app services helping you deliver some of those workloads as well. But what if you want to actually drill down deeper and figure out what these different computation options we've got in there? So if you think about it, you know, you've got different options, you know, depending on what level of access you want, you usually choose between them. And there is this concept of serverless as well, which is what we'll be discussing today. So to begin with, I guess, let's just start off by understanding how it used to be before the cloud, right? If you think about it, you know, you went down to the store, you bought some tin, and then you started deploying your applications, and you were consuming it after that. You sort of move it forward to when sort of IaaS started appearing about a few years ago. You no longer needed to think about virtual machines. It was all, you didn't have to buy tins at all. It was all about just spinning up virtual machines in the cloud, so you don't really own any hardware as such. And move it forward to PaaS as well. Over the last, you know, very recent years, you've seen a lot of pickup in the PaaS world as well. You've got databases that are managed as a service for you. You've got identity managed as a service for you as well. You've got Office applications. You've got a whole lot of stuff that's already managed for you, and all you have to do is really focus on building that logic and and maintaining that database so that your sort of customers can still get the full flexibility of it, as well as get a full access to all the information that there is available. And if you think about it, you know, once we were deploying these applications on the PaaS platform, we can enable auto-scaling, we can do a whole lot of stuff, but beneath it, there is always the intention or the idea of having some sort of a virtual machine behind it. So wherever you go, you'll always have a very fixed amount of, you know, container on top of which you'll run your websites or your APIs or your microservices and stuff. So that is where it will sit. Docker, for example, is a classic example as well. You know, a lot of different ways of orchestrating Docker environments, a lot of different ways of actually having someone else manage the basic infrastructure for you and you running your containers on top of it. And that's what we've been doing with app services for quite a while. And if you think about serverless, in some ways, it's not really serverless. You're not getting rid of servers at all. It's just that as a developer, we don't get to see those servers and we shouldn't really care about those servers. As long as we are receiving that scale, as long as we receive, basically, I guess what we're trying to do is go down to the lowest possible unit, right from a configuration point of view all the way up to a code point of view. and the smallest piece of work that will actually help you deliver a specific task. And we'll discover this scenario and understand what serverless really is over the next sort of 1 hour. And as you can see from the slide itself, you know, scaling is, with serverless, you're scaling every single component of your application, right from maybe a single part of the app, which actually is perhaps creating an invoice or doing some watermarks for you on your documents and so on. So it's all the way down to a very, very specific problem that the function is trying to solve in the cloud. And some of the benefits, if you think about it, you know, you have the capability of being able to run as per abstraction. Then you have scale based on the number of events you're receiving, based on the number of workloads you're receiving, based on the number of requests your service is receiving at that one point in time. And then again, I guess different cloud vendors have different ways of doing billing as well, but effectively the idea is that you just pay for what you use and for the amount of scale you sort of use it for. In simpler terms, if I had to summarize what serverless really is all about, serverless computing is like your code, a toggle bar, and your credit card, and that's it. So at the end of the day, it's really about figuring out how can you make the most of just writing a piece of code, throwing a credit card on it, and off you go building your applications and consuming them. And if you think about it, right, if you compare this with sort of existing applications or existing frameworks, you've got, you know, loosely coupled components in this case. For example, if you want to actually do some computation within your phone, you can actually now do it asynchronously over a function sitting in the cloud. And we'll discuss some of those scenarios as well as part of demos. And then you have this flexibility of really drilling deeper down into a specific problem, as I was saying before. So it's about having super micro nano functionality to react to a single event based on a trigger or based on a timer or based on a webhook request. So, and that's where Azure Functions comes into play as well. With Azure Functions, what we've done is we've given you the full flexibility of what language you want to use. We've got first-party support for C# and Node, and there's experimental support for everything else that you see on the screen and otherwise. The pricing model is interesting as well. If you think about it, we've got two different options. One is the classic app services plan, where you can actually just spin up and use a sort of set amount of infrastructure on top of your app functions app. Or if you want dynamic scale, where you have the flexibility of scaling out automatically without having to deal with that component, which will be managed for you by Azure Functions. And one of the best things about this is that you get the same classic experience. You can go down to the console. You can do NPM, whatever you want. You can install libraries. You can install NuGet packages. You can do a whole lot of stuff just like a normal app. But in this case, it's running as a function in the cloud. And then again, if you think about enterprise functionality, you've got, you know, Auth available as well, Active Directory, Facebook, Google, and so on as well. And integration as well. So there is a lot of support for integration. If you're using Logic Apps as part of your workflows today, it all runs with Azure Functions. There are triggers available within Logic Apps that help you configure some of those workloads as well. So effectively, I guess, this is how the logo came about as well. It's all about having an event-driven piece of code that's sitting in the cloud. And that's where sort of you get Azure Functions part of your workloads. So I guess without further going too much into slides, let's quickly look at some demos. I'll probably spend the next 15, 20 minutes going through some of the first 101 scenarios and talking about them, and then we'll come back and see what else we have in available as applications for this Azure Functions. So this is a portal. This is the Azure portal. And if you go down to functions.azure.com, that is where you'll be redirected to the homepage of Functions. And over there, if you click on Try for Free, it will then give you this nice UI over there where you can actually go ahead and click a few buttons and get full access to Azure Functions. So let's go ahead and maybe select, I guess we'll start off by hitting off a webhook in this case. Choice of language can be whatever you feel like. Let's go with JavaScript in this case and click on Create This Function. We don't want an auth provider, so let's just try and leave it. Oops. I think scaling is not. Okay. Well, there's another way of doing it now. So let's go down to new on the portal itself. So you don't have to follow that one. I think this, the resolution is a bit messy on my screen right now. But if you go to compute, under compute, you'll find Azure Functions right over there. And once you enter in there, you just have to enter some details. I'll call it Ignite. If I can type NZ demo. Whoa, looks like someone's taken that. And I'll just pick and just choose whatever resource group you want to choose. In this case, I'll just go with this one. And here are the two different options that you've got. The classic option, which is the same as any other app service app that you spin up, be it a web app or an API app or whatever. And dynamic scale is what is probably the best option in this case if you think about getting the dynamic scale, getting charged for what you run and how long you run it. And then let's just go ahead and use Australia Southeast. And then you can choose based upon your workload what amount of memory you want to attach to this function. And then you just have to attach a storage account over here. I'll quickly pick this one. And I'll leave everything else as it is and just click on Create. And that's how simple it is. So once you've just specified a couple of details in there, it goes off and creates a functions app for us. And then the best part about it is that you can actually go ahead and finish it off and start creating new functions itself. So I've got one of the functions already created for me beforehand so that I can speed up some of the process. Now if you go ahead and see, it's just a similar dashboard and a similar UI to what we saw earlier. So it's quite similar. But in this case, I'll just go ahead and click on New. And from there on, I'll just probably pick up. So you can actually choose what language you're looking for from this dropdown. If I can open this off, there you go. So you've got different options. You've got Bash and Batch, and you've got C#, F#, and a whole lot of stuff that you can actually play with. But for this demo, let's just probably stick to core. And to begin with, I'll select the Node.js HTTP trigger. And then let's come roll down, give it a name if you want. Authorization is fine. Probably leave it at the function level and create. And once you receive that, all you have to do is, if you see over here, the UI actually updated just about yesterday. So if some of you have used functions in the past, you might notice some differences over here. But I just saw the functions UI change yesterday as I was preparing for my talk. So anyway, if you scroll down, you've got a nice UI all up. You can actually edit your function right within the Azure portal itself. And you can play with it. You can do different things. You can probably attach your you can change code within it, or you can probably look at the logs as well, for example. So we've got a live stream of logs available for us as well. And in this case, let's just go ahead and click on Run, copy this URL, and then go ahead and browse this URL and see what there is to it. So if I just zoom in a bit, you'll see that it's giving me an error, which is similar to what I've got over here in code. So if you see closely, that's what I've got in my code as well over here. Now let's go back and maybe attach to the query string. There you go, name equals. Just type in my name, and there you go. So all I had to do was just attach a query string for name, because that's what the code actually said. And over there, I've got my name along with that. Now, the best thing about this is that the speed of update is actually pretty quick as well. So if you go ahead and if you want to change and alter some of the text in there, maybe let's try this one. Control-S works on the portal as well, just as a nice add to it. And if you go ahead and press Enter once again, you'll see the speed of how quickly the code actually changes. So you can actually implement a lot of changes while you're on the go, and it's actually quite responsive to that. So once we've done that, if you see about this, it's all in Node.js. But if you want to replicate the same functionality, you can do similar function for C# as well. It's available as one of the templates to use. And you can go off, create it, and click on Run, copy it, go to the page, and let's just try it once again. And there you go. So it was just as simple as that. Works in both C# and Node without any changes to the code itself. Now let's look at another example. So we've got another template for GitHub, for example. So in this case, if I go ahead and search for probably one of the samples in there, you'll find out that there is a sample for, just have to figure that one out. There you go. So there is the GitHub webhook for Node.js or C#. Let's just go with C# in this case. Scroll down, click on create, and it creates a trigger for us that we can use for our GitHub account over here. So what you can do is, for example, if you've got a couple of GitHub repos, maybe private as part of your organization or public, and you just want to monitor and track different activities within your repo, and you want to potentially filter out some of the stuff in terms of the notifications you receive, you can actually just go down, pick up one of the repositories. Maybe I'll just pick any one of the older ones that I've got. Let's go with this one. And then I can just go in there, and under settings, I can click on webhooks, add a webhook. I can just paste in that URL, go back to my function, copy the secret, and I'll just get it to send me everything. Add a webhook, and once you're done, let's try and do some activity in there. So let's just create a new issue. This is a issue. Code works. What's happening? There we go. And hopefully, if you look at the logs, we should receive a notification in there. So as you can see, there was a notification that came up to our function. If you don't believe me still, let's try it once again and close the issue. And there you go. You've got one more notification in there as part of it. So that's how quick and easy it is to actually spin up these little tiny examples. Is it visible on the screen? Oh, yeah, it is. OK, cool. So that's how you can sort of use some of these templates and actually go about using them. So what we've seen so far is just one way of deploying functions or using functions was through a webhook or a HTTP trigger. But there are two more options, as you might have seen earlier with the fancy UI. You've got a way of actually doing it as per a timer trigger, or you can do it through a trigger based on one of the other services in Azure, such as blobs or queues and such. So let's kick off a new function. And in this case, let's go off with a timer one. So if I go ahead and quickly find the timer trigger over here, and perhaps let's just go with the Node.js function. And in this case, if you closely see over here, we are using the cron job timer option so that we can easily use that as part of our demo. And let's just quickly, maybe let's just try and do something with it over here. So what happens in this case is that this will be running probably once every 5 seconds. And once we get in there, we can sort of try running it, and hopefully it will run after every 5 seconds. So as you can see, there is a notification over here that says it's successful. But what else you can do with this is actually go onto the Integrate tab and attach more inputs and outputs if you want. So for example, you might want to trigger this function once every 5 seconds, but you might also want to grab inputs from other services in Azure, or perhaps a SQL table or something else, or a document DB table. So you can attach all those different features in it. So in this example, I'll go off with Azure Storage Queue maybe, and select that option and just give it a name over here. Select a name for the queue as well. I'll leave everything as default. Select a storage account that I've been using, and click on Save. So once I've done that, you'll see that in the background, my function will still be updating and changing and doing its thing after every 5 seconds, hopefully. OK, I think I've got to just configure one more setting in here. Just give me a second. There we go. 5 seconds. And once I've done that, I can then go ahead and trigger a new function that will get triggered by an input of a queue. So I've got a queue trigger over here as well. So if we choose one of the samples in here and grab that one, and we can always change these parameters later on. So if you go ahead and create that one, you can then go ahead into back into the trigger that we had earlier. Right click, sorry, that one, and then click on integrate, and then you can just grab the name of the storage queue from here. There we go. And then if we go to the queue trigger, you can then basically go ahead and paste that in, and you can click on save. Now let's just go ahead and try to do one thing. So what happens in this case is that every 5 seconds, one of my functions is being called, and then whenever it's being called, I want to send a queue message back to that queue that we've just created. So to do that, what we'll do is we will go to that timer trigger once again, and we'll just write a simple line of code in there which goes something like this, context.bindings dot, I forgot the name of the queue, just give me, where is it? There we go. Cool. So this is the parameter name, output queue item. So let's just grab that, go in there, and create a new message. So there you go. Maybe let's just start off. Since we are still at Hello World, let's just keep it as Hello World. And in this case, add a timestamp as well along with it. If I can type it correctly. And as you can see, I've got some IntelliSense working for me as well in here, so that it's nice and easy when I'm typing and running this. So every 5 seconds, it should hopefully trigger this function and add a new item to the queue. And if we go back to our queue trigger file over there, which is being triggered whenever there's a new item to the queue, you'll see that that function is also getting triggered. And to prove that it's actually working, I've got my Azure Storage Explorer over here. And hopefully, if I just do a refresh, there you go. It should hopefully have some more. All right. Yep, so it's actually pretty quick, I thought, because I usually had a couple of. So, well, that's the basic idea. You've got that concept of actually triggering something from one of the functions, and then you can grab the other one from the other one. And that's sort of the basic Hello World concepts that sort of explain the three different functionalities that we've got within Azure Functions. Let's go back and have a quick look at some of the slides once again. In this case, as you can see, you've got. The idea really is if you've got a specific task, which in this case is, for example, you know, creating an invoice and you want to fetch some new requests from the queue, create an invoice and store that in some sort of a storage, or be it a queue. What happens usually is that we end up configuring a lot of stuff. But with Azure Functions, we can actually eliminate a lot of those processes and just focus on creating that specific invoice. And that is effectively what we are trying to achieve in this case. As I said earlier, there is first-party support with C# and Node, and you've got all the experimental support for different languages. There will be a couple of languages being added soon as well, and you'll see that pretty soon. So since we are nearly halftime, it's time for a halftime joke. Does anyone know what does a function in my bathroom have in common? A scale that I mostly ignore. Oh, no. Oh, no. All right. Okay. Anyway, so hopefully it woke you up once again. Anyway, so I guess, as I said earlier in my sort of agenda as well, you know, we will be comparing web jobs and functions towards the end, but effectively, if you think about it, the whole functions architecture is based on the core Web Jobs SDK. If you go today, I think on GitHub, it's still called Web Jobs SDK. And the best part about it is that you've got the same functionality of web jobs that you had previously as well, but also get the flexibility of using dynamic scale and really not care about the scale, as I said just in the previous slide. So let's have a look at some of the best practices of functions programming model. As you look at it, you've got the idea of really having, you know, different ways of starting an input or starting at a trigger or starting at a specific webhook, and you can choose between those different inputs as well. And towards the end, you can also attach outputs for your functions app. So you don't necessarily need to follow the way you're configuring your app. In some scenarios, you might have a mobile app that you want to use, for example. So if you think about maybe a mobile app that takes a picture of an invoice and you want to implement some OCR to actually detect what was the total amount of that specific receipt, you can grab that information, throw that image in one of the blob storages, and throw the line of that total amount in one of the easy tables in mobile apps. So you can enable these scenarios without having to do a lot of plumbing, because a lot of times we are sort of writing code to actually do these connection strings and enable basic post requests and stuff. But it is very important for us to remember that, you know, as a functions app, it is necessary to keep it down to a single thing. For example, in my previous sort of Hello World demos as well, you saw, it might seem very basic and very straightforward, but effectively that's the core idea. You want to make sure that if you are triggering on a queue to process a specific task, that is exactly what you cover off. Functions should be idempotent. It is one of the sort of core, I guess, fundamentals of functions as a service across different cloud vendors and different architectures. And you want to have the job finish as soon as possible, as well as part of your architecture overall. So effectively, I guess if I had to summarize, you know, on how to really use the functions programming model, the idea is that when you have something, you grab something, do this, and at the end of it, you have an output that you want to process and send it off somewhere else. So that is what the key takeaway from, I guess, the overall functions programming model is. A lot of people, a lot of companies out there now, a lot of startups are actually basing off their architecture on serverless as well, where everything is attached to a piece of code that does a whole lot of stuff. And as you might have seen already in the schema as well, you know, you've got your triggers attached, you've got your inputs, you've got your core code, and then towards the end, you want to just send out an output as well, as I've said earlier. This is an interesting one. So scaling, again, as I said, you've got two different options. You've got one of the traditional app services plan tiers where you can actually choose between basic, standard, premium. You can decide how many number of instances you want to reserve for it, and you are yourself responsible for scale. If you want to set that automatically, that's, again, up to you based on what parameters and based on what performance you want to set those parameters and have that dedicated sort of instance sitting behind your functions app, which also means that you can have multiple app services apps running on the same instance as well, so which gives you a bit of flexibility in the way you handle pricing and so on. But the way the dynamic scaling works is that you sort of pay for the number of executions, and platform is responsible for everything outside of your code, essentially. This is how the pricing is calculated usually. You know, it's based on number of executions divided by the duration of execution times reserve memory. So I guess effectively the idea behind serverless really is that, or functions app, is that you've got the flexibility of getting servers when you want them, and you can go serverless and have dynamic scale when you don't want them. So let's look into some of the, I guess, other things as well. Because if you think about it, writing code in the browser is great, but what about replicating that stuff locally on your machine as well? And then there are some questions around, you know, how do you actually enable those CI and CD practices that you've got with normal APIs and normal app services? So let's have a look, quick look at that, and let's see what support there is available, and let's come back and see what all we can do with it. Cool. So I'll quickly fire off my command interface. I hope it is visible. I hope it's visible at the back, is it? Oh, good, cool. So in this case, I've got, so you can go to npm and download Azure Functions CLI, and that is triggered by FUNC Funk. You've got different options in there, so you can actually do the whole Azure Functions without the portal and straight away from the command line itself. So in this case, maybe let's start off by creating a new function. So let's just go func new, and that will then trigger Yeoman. Through Yeoman, I can, for example, find different templates. I can search for templates by language or by type and do it that way as well. But let's just go for the first option. It will go ahead and give us a few different options, just like the portal itself. You can scroll through all of them and play and understand which one sort of fits your requirement at that point in time. I'm just going to go with the standard HTTP C# trigger. I'll give it a name as well. I'll call it Ignite Demo. And then once we are in the demo itself, you can actually go over to that directory and open that code within Visual Studio Code. So let's open up Visual Studio Code real quickly. And as you can see from this example, you've got the same files that you would typically have within the Functions app on the portal itself. And that reminds me that I forgot to show you one feature within Azure Functions. So within the Functions portal UI, you've got the files view over here. So what you can do is you can attach more files to it. Even though it's recommended not to sort of overcomplicate your function, you can still have full access to the way you handle triggers and the way you sort of manage your files within a specific Functions app. So in this case, for example, I've got functions.json, which basically defines different bindings and, you know, basically explains what the bindings are, you know, for example, the queue name and connection string and so on. And then I've got my index.js, which is the core logic behind my function. And similarly over here, I've got this scenario where you've got function.json that basically, if you've used functions before, you would understand through that piece of code that it's effectively starting off a new HTTP trigger. And it is on the input side, so whenever someone hits that trigger, you grab that trigger and do some stuff that's written in run.csx. So you can actually achieve all of that through this process as well. And then I can go back to my command line as well, and I can continue running. If you go to function, you'll see that there's one of the options where you can actually go ahead and run your function and take it from there as well. So you've got full support of actually running the function locally on your machine as well. Okay. And as I was talking earlier about how to sort of configure continuous integration, again, it's super easy. It's just a click of a button. You go down to the function settings. Under there, you can then configure and set up your CI/CD, maybe if it's through your GitHub repo or if it's through Visual Studio Team Services or Bitbucket account or wherever you've got your repository, you can directly attach your files from there and grab your information directly in there. Again, you've got full support for authentication as well. And you can also sort of configure cores for your triggers. So whenever there's a trigger enabled, you can have that configured within your Functions app, just like a normal web service app. Cool. So let's head back to a couple of slides. As I said earlier, the function CLI is available. So if you just go and search for npm Azure Functions, you'll get that line to basically download it, and you can use the full CLI experience as well. You don't have to use the portal. And let's just look at some quick examples of how you can actually make the most of it. And then I've sort of written a couple of demos, and we'll just go through that and get back to the slides after that. So think about a timer-based application, which is what we've just done recently, where you potentially might want to, you know, using a cron job syntax, you can actually set up a timer, and through there you can execute a piece of code that potentially runs every 15 minutes and goes ahead and cleans up a database table based on some business logic that you've got within your application. Another scenario would be for when you have to, you know, execute serverless code that reads newly discovered test log files, for example, which is probably sitting in blob storage, and then perhaps transitions that into Azure SQL data, transitions that into a row that sits in your SQL database table. And then you can also use some of the SAS connectors as well if you want. So you can potentially use OneDrive, which probably then does some serverless, has a small function written that then converts your Excel spreadsheets into nice graphs for nice presentation and UI. And apart from that, if you think about actually building your whole application, you can also use webhooks and URLs to enable different, scenarios where you potentially have authentication through Azure AD. You just have a URL for that. You don't need to have a proper website for that stuff as well. So you can use a combination of SAS connectors, and you can use Functions app that sort of handles the core logic behind it. And as I said earlier, with mobile apps as well, you can do a whole lot of stuff where you process some image and do something with it. And I've got a demo to show that in just a few minutes on that as well. And of course, how can we forget bots? You can also build bots using Azure Functions, and I'll show that to you in just a minute as well. So let's quickly go off and have a look at a couple more demos that I've got over here and go through them real quickly. So what I've done in this case is built a little Functions app. I'll actually open that up to begin with. It's called OCR Demo. And what this Functions app does is that it basically, so whenever I add an image to a specific container within a blob storage, it takes that image as an iCloud blob type, which effectively has that image. I grab that URL from that image, and then I send it off to the Vision API in Cognitive Services. So if you haven't used Cognitive Services before, so it's just microsoft.com/cognitive-services. So in there, there is a Computer Vision API. And Computer Vision API is what I'm using for my current demo over here. So you can go on and configure that and use that as part of your application as well. So I've got a unique code, not the best practice. I should rather have this within my app settings, but I just kept it simple for the demo. And then once I receive a response, I then basically look through it and find out through a receipt that what will be the kind of final. So within my Computer Vision APIs, I've got different options. And one of them is, for example, Face. The other one is OCR. And everything sits within the same Computer Vision APIs itself. So through the actual SDK itself, what I've done is I've attached a project.json file. And this project.json file defines that dependency for me over here. So I've got the Computer Vision NuGet package from as a dependency for my Functions app over here. And then I can go into my functions.json, and I see that I've got a blob trigger configured over there. And then I've got this interesting mobile trigger as well that I'll talk about in just a minute as well. And once I receive that trigger, I basically send off that image over to Cognitive Services, which basically gives me an output. And then just for, you know, making sure everything's OK, I've got that configured to show up in the logs as well from this line over here. And then lastly, I just go ahead and process it out and then throw that information in an output record. So let's go ahead and try one quick thing. Let's go off to my Azure Storage Explorer, wherein I've got a blobs container. And let's open up the OCR demo. I was trying a few things in there. But let's just quickly paste one of these images, which somewhat looks like a receipt, and drop it on top of my blob container. Now, as you can see, there was a function that was carried out over here. And I can see that this was the text that was received from it. And in total, it found that the total amount of value of the receipt was perhaps $5. So to actually show what there was really inside it was that it was just a way of showcasing an image, but it wasn't really an actual receipt. Now let's see if an actual receipt works or not as well as part of it. So let's just drop this receipt in there from one of my previous expenses. I'll just pick it up and drop it in my blob container as well. And then if we go in there, it has, if you see over there, I'm not sure how much of that is visible. It's got a credit card voucher from one of my expenses in Orlando earlier this year, and it was able to find out that the total amount for that bill was $34. Now to show that how it is helping me further, I'll go on to probably opening up a new portal real quickly and go into mobile apps. So if you've used mobile apps before, it is a good way of having a backend as a service for your mobile applications. Doesn't matter what sort of mobile app you're using. So if I go into Easy Tables, I've got a table already configured. Let's just wait for it to load. It's taking a while to load. There we go. And as you can see, I can just maximize this over here as well. I've got this piece of information that I've been using, and I can see the text over there as well, and I can see the total amounts from those receipts when I was processing those images. So using OCR functionality from Cognitive Services, I was able to use functions as a way of configuring a backend. Now, what if you want to actually take it a step forward as well? What if you want to perhaps, once you process that image, you might want to resize it and save it somewhere else. So there is a second scenario where potentially you've got a massive file or a massive image, and you want to convert that into a smaller size or potentially a medium size as well, and throw it in a different blob storage container, and you have another functions app that clears up the main blob repository, which has the original image size from your records completely. So to do that, it's actually, again, extremely simple. I'll just quickly grab one of the samples from here as well. So if you go on, you can grab the image resizer sample and paste it in there and just give it the name of the blob container path, which in my case was OCR. I'll go ahead and grab my storage account from there. I'll just change the output of my small image over here. So I'll probably change that to OCR as well. And OCR over here, and change that storage account. Now, just to make sure that everything's good, and I'm not sort of smoking it up, I've just got three containers in there, and I don't have any medium or small containers at all. So let's just go ahead and click Create. And once we come back here, you have an interesting sample that you can sort of reuse. It's basically grabbing an image from blob storages and then converts that into two different sizes. So once I save it and have a look at the logs, as you can see, it started a couple of functions and completed them as well. So let's just go ahead and have a look and refresh my container. It takes a couple of seconds usually. But there we go. We've got our images already processed, the ones that we recently sent, and it's sort of completed that task for me without having to do a lot of work. So you've got the flexibility of actually attaching these together without really having any dependency on each other, all based on triggers and easy to use. And further to this, you can perhaps grab a sample app from the portal itself and then think about how can you enable the next set of workloads as well. So let's switch back to slides and have a look at the differences between, I think I forgot to show you one simple demo. Let me just grab from here. I'll just quickly show that up on the screen in a minute. There we go. As I said earlier, you know, you can do a whole lot of stuff with functions. And if I go back and switch and look for one of the functions that I've got, just quickly open that up. Come on. While this is loading, I'll probably just, oh, there we go. Cool. So what I've done in here is I just went ahead and grabbed the bot connector NuGet package, or I just said, hey, I want to use bot connector library. And once I grab that, effectively what I'm doing is through the bot framework itself, whenever I see quote, and I know it's quite simple, I'm not using any of the fancy Lua stuff, but in this case, whenever the text equals to quote, I go ahead and generate a random quote from one of the APIs that I found online. So let's go ahead and try it and see if that works. It was failing this morning, but let's try it once again. So let's type in quote and have a look at this once again. There we go. So effectively, you can write a bot that's sitting on Messenger through maybe about 80 lines of code. Most of that is just boilerplate, and the core logic is probably about a few lines. You grab a quote directly from Messenger without having to do a whole lot of work. So you don't really have to set up a full project, and you can do everything from within Functions app itself. And you can take it a step further as well if you want, and you can think about how do you use it for your different scenarios. Maybe perhaps if you want to use it within logic apps, you can also do that too. As I said earlier, there are triggers available for logic apps. And in this case, I was, for example, following a specific hashtag on Twitter. So you've got Twitter connectors in there, and you can say whenever a tweet is posted on hashtag Azure, or let's go for Ignite NZ, because that seems to be quite popular for obvious reasons, go ahead and send the text of my tweet over to a function that processes that tweet, and then finally post that off to Slack if I wanted to. And if I save that and click on enable, successfully enabled, and let's probably go off to Slack and have a look at my channel. I'm not sure if anyone's tweeting at this point in time. There we go. It's running some stuff. There we go. Perfect. Oh, it didn't save my hashtag MSIgnite. But effectively, what's happening in this case is I am processing all the hashtag Azures, and I'm grabbing a score of the tweet text through Cognitive Services. So what you can do is you can actually have this for your companies. If you have a Twitter account for any of your companies, you can grab this, a very simple demo that basically sends the tweet text off to Cognitive Services, grabs that information, and sets it up with a score based on how likely or the user was, or how happy or the text was, how happy or sort of negative the text was within that tweet. And you can sort of continue that stuff from there on. And we've just got a few more minutes left, so let's just finish it off by comparing, you know, what's different with web jobs and how it is configured. So with web jobs, you know, you had more freedom, but you also had to do a lot of work. But in this case, with Azure Functions, you have this concept of really not having to care about a lot of scale. You know, as I said, serverless architecture, so you don't really see the servers at all, and you can easily use them across the board. And my Slack channel is just exploding right now. Just disable it. And then further on, you know, there are lots of things that are quite similar, and we've kept them same from web jobs over to functions as well. There is support for triggers and inputs and outputs and full binding support for all of those different options. Again, as I said earlier, it's based on the same web jobs SDK, so a lot of the things that you see within functions were existingly available on functions as, on web jobs as well. And you know, web jobs SDK was C sharp only, but now it's sort of supporting both C sharp and Node as a first party app, and you also have more experimental support that's sort of constantly being added as well to it. And again, hosting models are a bit different as well. As I said earlier, nothing new in that stuff. You know, you had the capability of web jobs were attached to a specific app service plan, and whereas Azure Functions, you have the flexibility of choosing a dynamic or a classic way of doing these things. And again, if you want to continue to know more about this stuff, you know, grab this information. You can just go onto functions.azure.com and understand all of that stuff. The whole platform is open source. The SDKs and stuff are all open source. You can grab it online on GitHub as well. And then there is the Azure CLI tooling that you can grab as well. You can download that from NPM, through NPM. And then lastly, if you want to try Azure Functions, you can, again, go down to functions.azure.com. And if you've got any questions, feel free to ask them now. Yep. How did I attach my bot to the messenger? So if I quickly switch over and show you my... Whoops, maybe not that. So if I, and as you can see, my Slack channel is just going crazy. Let me just turn off notifications. Cool. So within the bot, if you go to dev.botframework.com, you can just go in there and click on my bots, in my case. And I've got this bot that I created over here. So I can just open up the quote bot. And within my quote bot, all I had to do was, if I show you the parameters in there, I've just got the name of the bot itself. And I've just attached the same URL that I got from Azure Functions. And once I get that URL, I just basically register it with the Microsoft app ID and password, give my publisher name and stuff, and basically go ahead and save changes. And once I'm done with that, I can then follow a step-by-step tutorial that enables me to publish this on any of these different channels. But in this case, I chose Messenger, and I can go ahead and click on that link that will open up that window for me to interact with the bot itself. Cool. Any more questions? Yes. So I guess what happens usually is that within a functions app overall, you've got multiple functions that you can configure. So between those, you can share NuGet packages. But if you keep it outside of a specific functions app container, it won't be sharing any of the NuGet packages. No, I think the scope would sort of, for example, I'll just quickly open that functions. So the scope would essentially be stuck to all these functions that I've got within this functions app. So that would be the scope as far as I'm aware. Oh, sorry, I actually forgot to repeat the questions previously, but I'll repeat the question now. The question was, if I have maybe 100 requests at one point in time, does the scaling handle itself and open up 100 more instances? And the answer is, it depends on the workload. But what usually happens is that if you've got a massive chunk of work that's coming your way, depending on different parameters that they've configured within the platform, your functions app will scale into multiple instances. And the best part is that those functions will be processed in parallel as well. So it won't be a sequential trigger. So you'll actually save time, and you'll quickly complete that job.
I guess my only fear is if I want to write something to the database, I don't want to have 100 connections.
Yeah. I haven't personally come across a lot of, I guess it depends on what the scenario you're trying to achieve as well through that. The intention really is that you want to achieve a specific task, and usually the scope is not that big to actually hit any of the limitations within the functions platform so far. And it's still in preview, so you know it might, as we sort of progress further, you can actually get further support for that if you are facing any issues with limitations, but I haven't heard of any specific limitations so far. There is a limitations on number of function apps you can create, of course, but you can always get that further up by just logging a support request. Any other questions? Yep.
Do the box work with Skype for Business, or is it just Skype at this point?
It is just Skype at this point, but I mean, to me, it seems that likely in the future you'll also have Skype for Business because it's a no-brainer, but for now it's only Skype. Cool, so don't forget to complete your evaluations to win one of the Surface Pro 4s or the tablets, and thank you for coming.